Welcome, everyone. Thanks for being with me this next hour. I'm your host, psychic astrologer C.A. Brooks, and you're listening to Simple Tales, where astrology and spiritual alchemy rocks on Transformational Tuesdays here on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way we listen to the world. This is August 26th, 2014. Now, last week, and in my column in Mark's Power Peak, I've really been pushing the idea of the season of Virgo as being the time to go back to school. So on today's show, we are doing just that. And the topic is sacred geometry. My guest is Bruce Rawls, a widely acknowledged sacred geometry teacher, visionary mystic, and digital media artist, and he's also the author of several books on sacred geometry. Now, he admits that he's been at this for at least 35 years. Now, I suspect it's been much longer, because I'll bet you he's been doing this ever since he was a kid. But in any case, I know we're in for a treat today. But let's take a quick look at the cosmic dance first before we get into sacred geometry. Yesterday, we entered a new lunar cycle with a new moon in Virgo. Now, I don't know about you, but I have had this sudden urge to clean out the closets and clear the clutter and set up some new routines. In fact, even this morning before the show, I opened a closet and I said, okay, I've just got to clean this out. And I literally had to just stop myself and say, CA, you've got other things on your agenda this morning. So, save it. You can do that this afternoon or tomorrow. But I can just feel it. You know, the energy is just there. And that sounds about right with Virgo. But I also think she had a lot of help because yesterday, Mars, the planet of energy and motivation, aligned with Saturn, the planet of discipline. So you take the architect and then you take the energizer and you put those two things together. Well, sometimes there can be fireworks, but for the most part, if you've got an idea in mind, now is the time to implement it because you've got the energy behind you. And I think as we combine all these energies with that new moon, we really are ready to take on some new structures. I mean, maybe establish a new routine or a diet or an exercise program. Maybe it's about taking a class or learning something new. It's not just your imagination. You probably are feeling more motivated than usual. But here's the thing. You're probably also feeling a little resistant to sticking with the status quo or doing things by somebody else's rules. Because also important this week is the planet Venus, which yesterday aligned with revolutionary Uranus, which today she's now going to square off with Saturn, and then tomorrow she's going to form a square with Mars. So now, although this can mean a few challenges in relationships, I mean, when we talk about Venus, people's mind always, they automatically go to love and romance. But I want you to think of the much bigger picture here, because Venus is the planet of values, and she represents how we attract people and events and situations into our lives. So when she mixes it up with these outer planets, I mean, literally Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, three in a row, then it's going to be a little challenging. And it's important that we stop and just look at these situations, even if the situations feel like fights or confrontations, because there can be really important messages here about what we find important or what we desire in our life. Because maybe it's just an internal conflict that's really working its way out, showing us that maybe some of the things have changed for us. Now, Venus and Uranus are helping us expand our awareness of the many avenues of love and happiness. Maybe it doesn't have to come in the path or in the package that we thought it did. We just might find ourselves attracted to something or someone that seems completely different from the past. Now, although it might sound silly, it can be as simple as, you know, liking a new flavor of ice cream or trying a new restaurant and realizing that you really do like Thai food or trying a new style. Or maybe your partner wants to go camping for your anniversary and you kind of had a weekend at the Ritz-Carlton in mind. Well, Uranus says, check out something new and different. Wake up. Be willing to think outside the box. Move outside of your comfort zone. Now, Venus square to Saturn and Mars is going to help us look at our values from a different direction, from a different angle. And I think one of the things it asks us is, do we do something just because we believe it will make us look more attractive or more lovable to somebody else? I mean, are we doing it for somebody else or are we doing it for ourselves? So even though these energies can be challenging, the truth is they can be so incredibly liberating because we're going to get a clearer picture of what we really want in our lives. Now, tomorrow, the Mars square Venus can also be pretty mischievous and sexy. So if you're in a relationship and you have a little fight, be prepared. There should be great makeup sex there. So keep your mind open to the possibilities. And one more quick note. Pay attention on Friday when the Sun makes an opposition to dreamy but sometimes disorienting Neptune, because Mercury, the planet of thinking and communications, is also going to be a little out of sorts that day. So it's going to be very important that we rely on our imagination and our intuition, because truthfully, I don't think logic and rational thinking is going to be the strong suit for the day. Not so much. So really pay attention to what your feelings are and just expect that things might just seem like a little fuzzy, a little, you know, a little dreamy, a little imaginative that day. Now, you can get more details about each and every day in the Week Ahead column in Mark's Power Peak at 12house.com. Today's musical tribute goes out to Frankie Avalon, born on September 18th. Now, this seemed like a pretty appropriate song for the week. So enjoy the music. I'll be right back with Bruce Rawls. While you're listening, please join us in the 12 Radio private group on Facebook. And if you're not already a member, go to the 12radio.com website and click the link that says chat. You will be redirected to Facebook where you can ask to join the group. And no worries, because our producer, Christy Brower, will be there to bring you in. I'll see you there. This is CA, and you are listening to Simple Tales on 12 Radio, changing the way we listen to the world. Welcome back, everybody. This is CA, and you are listening to Simple Tales, where astrology and spiritual alchemy rocks on 12 Radio, changing the way we listen to the world. My guest today is Bruce Rawls, and our topic is sacred geometry. So welcome, Bruce.
Thank you, CA. Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, thank you for coming back. Bruce was my guest last week on the Course in Miracles show, and we had such a good time. But truly, Bruce is one of these people. He knows so much about so many of these metaphysical topics. In fact, if you don't mind, I'm going to tell our audience that Bruce has four planets in his natal chart, including his sun and his moon, all sitting in the eighth house. And the eighth house, to me, is the house of esoteric knowledge and information. So it's not too surprising that this guy with an Aquarian rising spend so much time looking into topics like A Course in Miracles and sacred geometry and astrology and all of it. You know, you love it, don't you?
Yeah, you got me.
Got me pegged. What I'd like to start off with today is just a basic question because, you know, just tell us what it is. What is sacred geometry?
Well, you know, that's usually the first question people ask, and I usually come up with a different answer each time. But I would say in general, it's basically the art and science and the study of the principle of interconnectedness and how it finds its way into the realm of mathematics and geometric shapes and forms, two-dimensional, four-dimensional, three-dimensional, and everywhere you want to look. But it covers a lot of different ground because it really looks at the structure of our reality in this world and how we can begin to see patterns that really show us that everything is interconnected, that there really is no way to pull anything apart, which actually ties into traditional ancient mysticism as well as modern physics and certainly a lot of contemporary psychology and on and on. So does that help?
It does help, although, you know, it almost sounds like you're talking something not physical. You know, like when you say patterns, like patterns of communication or something, but you're literally talking, I mean, when we say geometry, and by the way, that was one of my worst subjects in high school. So when I hear that word geometry, you know, I needed somebody to be very, very concrete with me, and they were not, and that's why I didn't do well. So I need you to be concrete. So we're literally talking about patterns, like patterns in leaves or patterns that we can see in the world, right?
Absolutely. And those patterns, what first got me interested in this, essentially was there are two books. My spiritual mentor, my mom, in high school, while she was exploring a whole bunch of different things, which we touched on briefly in the previous show, one of the things that we were exploring, and she gave me a couple of books on to kind of fuel the interest, was Secrets of the Great Pyramid by Peter Tompkins. And that had a chapter in it on this thing called the golden ratio, which is a proportion or a relationship between numbers that turns out to be about 1.618. The exact value is 1 plus the square root of 5 over 2 for the math heads in the audience. And I can understand your gag reflex about anything, you know, mathematical or geometrical, because a lot of people have that, because a lot of people have this sort of pedantic experience in their high school, grade school, college classes, that's just all about the mundane of, here's what you need to do to build a bridge or design a circuit or you know, whatever you want to apply geometry, trigonometry, algebra, and all those kind of things to. It's very, you know, oriented toward, the practicality of things, which is nothing wrong with that, of course. And there's tremendous applications for geometry in just about every discipline you can think of. However, there's this sort of mystical side, if you will, that basically I think you can come by when you study the work of people like Plato and Pythagoras and Da Vinci and look at what they put into their art. I forgot to mention the other book, which is really all through nature. The other book that crossed my path and also in high school was This Living Earth by David Cavagnaro. And this was one of these coffee table books that had just a brief mention over a page or two of the golden ratio, which again is this proportion that relates to interconnectedness, because it's the only proportion where the ratio, if you divide a line into two places, into two parts rather, and you take the place where they intersect, and that point is not quite the midpoint, it's actually off to one side. You can imagine if the large part of this divided line relative to the smaller part is the same ratio, the same proportion as the whole line together divided by the large part. And if you plug that into the quadratic formula, if anybody remembers that, and again, pardon the gag reflex if that's what's happening, if you weren't fond of math, but that's basically how you derive this 1 plus the square root of 5 over 2 proportion. But that you'll find that everywhere. It's everything from stock market analysis. People actually do really well, apparently, using Fibonacci numbers, which are again a series that of numbers that relate to the golden ratio, and they occur all throughout nature. And this book, This Living Earth by David Cavagnaro, had in it examples of things like fiddle ferns and parrot's claws and spirals and things like that that occur in nature. You know, the cochlea of the inner ear and the shape of the fetus and the spiral patterns you see on satellite photos of hurricanes and tornadoes and just, you know, your bathtub drain for that matter. But just about everywhere you look, there are patterns that embody this principle of interconnectedness. And the reason I call it interconnected is because if you have something that has the same relationship, no matter how far you expand or contract it. Fractals are a perfect example. If any of your audience is familiar with the idea of a fractal, you wouldn't even have much of the modern film industry's special effects without fractals, because they're used tremendously over and over again to create artificial worlds and landscapes. And the reason why they're so realistic is because they pattern this intrinsic beauty that we find in proportion. Where if for example, the ratio of if you stand with your arms outstretched slightly lowered, you can trace a five-pointed star between your head and your arms and your, you know, the tips of your fingers and the tips of your toes. Mm-hmm. And that pentagram or five-pointed star, if you will, is the perfect mathematical archetype for the golden ratio, because you can each piece of this five-pointed star has the golden ratio embedded in it. It's kind of difficult sometimes doing a radio show or something that's so visual, but if you can imagine a five-pointed star and then think of all the pieces in it, the small pieces compared to the large pieces have this golden ratio, every single one of them. And it turns out that if you take the inner pentagon of this five-pointed star and draw another five-pointed star, which is upside down inside that, which also could be a symbolic metaphor for a pregnant woman, or maybe if you're a Star Trek fan, tribbles that are born pregnant, because you could keep dividing a five-pointed star and its inscribed pentagon into another five-pointed star, and each one is 180 degrees opposite, but they go infinitely far into this infinitesimal point where they all converge, and then they also go outward, because you can draw a pentagon around a pentagram, and then if you extend the lines of that pentagon, you have another five-pointed star going outward instead of inward. So in either direction, you have this proportionality, and then the fractals that you see in some of your listeners are probably familiar with the Mandelbrot set. Have you heard of that term before?
I don't know that, huh?
Okay, if you Google Mandelbrot set, you will find all kinds of really cool stuff that basically is the result of someone named Benoit Mandelbrot, a mathematician of several decades ago, who was basically in the early days of computers playing around with fractional geometries, fractional dimensions. And we usually think of our geometric world that we live in, if we remember, hopefully not too much gag reflex again, but if you remember some of your high school geometry, you know, the X, Y, and Z axes. Well, mm-hmm. We usually think of things as either one-dimensional as being kind of silly or trivial, although there's some interesting metaphysics there. Two-dimensional is like a straight line. One-dimensional is a straight line, and then two-dimensional is a plane or a flat surface. The zero-dimensional is the stuff that is
metaphysical.
yeah, exactly. And then, but we live in what we think of as a three-dimensional world. Well, it turns out that you can actually mathematically postulate worlds that are and realities that are fractional geometries. Like, what if you could visit or inhabit a 2.794, just out of number out of a hat, dimensional world? Well, that's mm-hmm. kind of where Benoit Mandelbrot went with it, and he figured out how to show those kind of images. And his classic image that looks kind of like Betty Boop if you anyway, I, at least that was my initial reaction. This sort of rounded shape that has a little indentation on one side, but then that's the vast oversimplification, because it's this incredibly complex geometry that the farther you dive into it, the more complex it becomes. But it starts to repeat itself, and it's that repetition and that pattern that shows up again and again and again with this tremendous intricacy and variety and diversity. And yet there's a continuity that keeps showing up. The farther you dive in, the more you realize it's all related. It's all interconnected. And the take-home lesson for us metaphysically is that it's all interconnected. So I got into the art and science of sacred geometry by studying the golden mean, which is also known as the golden ratio, the golden proportion, the divine proportion, the extreme and mean ratio. It goes by a number of terms. When I was in college at the University of California, Davis, in the early 70s, and I pretty much exhausted everything that I could find on the subject in the Shields Library there. And I built all these things called polyhedra, which are basically three-dimensional shapes. The most familiar one to your listeners is likely to be the cube. And mm-hmm. everybody knows what a cube is. You know, you've got six squares and they go together to make a standard-looking thing. And the idea of a cube of these regular polyhedra is that all the faces are the same. The six squares that make up the cube are completely identical, but there are four other shapes that Plato is credited with, at least the naming of anyway, and these are called the Platonic solids, or the five regular solids in three-dimensional space. And the simplest one is called a tetrahedron, and a tetrahedron is basically three equilateral triangles joined. You know, if you imagine a three-sided pyramid, and then the base of that three-sided pyramid is also an equilateral triangle. Mm-hmm. So a very simple shape. And I don't usually go into the symbolism of them too much, because I like to stick to the math rather than kind of venturing out too much into, I think this means such and such kind of thing. But I'll just briefly give what Plato said these represent.
Yeah, because I want to hear, because I'm actually glad you brought those up, because I'm familiar with them. In fact, I actually have a little box of the Platonic solids, but sure. I don't know too much about them. I mean, that's what I wanted to know. Why are they so special? Why do they box them up, and why do people like me buy them?
I think it's because, again, there's that principle of interconnectedness that ties into them. So let me go through them, and then I'll explain how they're interconnected.
Okay.
So the first one, which I just mentioned, was the cube, or also known as a hexahedron. And the word hedron just means side. So hexa meaning six, and hedron meaning side means just a six-sided shape.
Okay.
And Plato ascribed that to the element of earth. And it's kind of an earthy shape, right?
Absolutely. A square is, like in feng shui, a square is earth.
Yeah. Seems intuitively reasonable, right?
Or at least interconnected.
Yeah. and then you have the tetrahedron. Well, the tetrahedron, he ascribed to the element fire. And it's the sharpest, most pointy of the five Platonic solids. And fire is kind of, you know, it's kind of sharp and pointy. I guess you could think of it that way. But what mm-hmm. I found, one of the things I found really fascinating years ago as I began to study this and connected with people that were researching this, I'm not even sure where I've discovered this, but it turns out that if you take the it might have been some of the work of Drimvalo Melchizedek, who is quite well known for popularizing the flower of life material and some fascinating stuff. Anyway, if you take this tetrahedron, this three-sided pyramid, and put one point of it on the north pole of the planet, our good old terra firma here, you will discover that the other three points all line up with the south 19.5 parallel above or below the equator. And if you put one on the south pole, it's exactly the opposite. And so you have the north 19.5 or 19.46 degree latitude line that makes a ring around the planet. So you have these two parallel arcs or rings that go around the planet. And if you look at where those touch One of them is right on a volcano in Mexico. One of them is on Mauna Kea in Hawaii. And there's, if you look at some of the active volcanoes and not so active volcanoes, but, you know, historically that have been active around the planet, there's a whole bunch of places on the planet that are at this 19.5 degree point. So I thought, well, what could be more fiery than a volcano, right?
Right.
So that's kind of cool. And then when we were visiting Hawaii some years ago, the camp ranger, when we went up to the top of Mauna Kea, was Haleakala was pointing over toward the Big Island where the active volcano, you know, the active lava flow is still. Mm-hmm. And then on a subsequent trip, flew over that in a helicopter. It was just you know, amazing to see the juice of Mother Earth, if you will, just, you know, raging below you and bright during the day even. I mean, it was like amazing, and the heat coming up 1,000 feet in the helicopter, you could still feel it in an enclosed cabin. But anyway, that lava is actually in a static position relative to the planet. But even though over thousands of years the volcanic islands shift, that hot spot stays at that 19.5 degree parallel.
Oh.
Which is what the geologist, park ranger, you know, informed us and was saying, no, she said the active lava, you know, is really stays in the same place. And that's why the Hawaiian islands have been, you know, spreading out, and then there's periods of activity, and then a new island comes up, and then there's a period, long periods of inactivity, and, you know, there's no island. But basically that's how they were formed. But I thought it was interesting is it staying at that point. So you could say, well, that's kind of, you know, coincidental, and yeah, probably is, or maybe is, or I don't know,
or probably not,
or no. But the other thing that was kind of fascinating was the only other active volcano in our solar system that we know of that the Voyager space program that NASA had some years ago discovered was on one of Jupiter's moons called Io, just the letter I and an O. One of those moons, they discovered a plume of volcanic activity in the photograph that the satellite sent back. And they figured, what latitude is it? You guessed it, 19.5. Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
It's very cool.
I think that's kind of cool. So you have the cube and you have the tetrahedron. There's earth and fire. And then the three others are the octahedron, which is, if you imagine, 8 equilateral triangles. And I have patterns of all these on my website, which is Geometry Code, and you can, you know, print them out and make them yourself. Basically, you take 8 equilateral triangles and just fold them up into a double pyramid, kind of more like the Great Pyramid back to back, if you will, but not quite the same angles, because they're all equilateral triangles. They all have the same angles and sides. Plato said that represented air. And then the last two are the icosahedron, which is, again, an equilateral triangle, but now there's 20 of them. Icosa means 20, and hedron, again, is side, so icosahedron means 20-sided, so you just take 20 equilateral triangles. He said that represented water. Now, that's the biggest, roundest, most smoothest of the five platonic solids. And then the last one is, to me, the most mystical one, if you will, and that's the dodecahedron. And dodeca is actually, do is 2, deca is 10, so that's really 12-sided dodecahedron, and that's 12 pentagons. So there's our pentagonal shape again, and Plato suggested that represented either spirit or ether. But interestingly enough, each of these platonic solids relates to each other, and you can actually nest them. And on my website, I've got an animation of showing how they can actually nest inside each other. And you can take a cube and put inside of it, a tetrahedron, and inside that put an octahedron that perfectly nests inside that, and inside that put an icosahedron that perfectly nests inside that, and inside that put a dodecahedron, and then if you chop off the little roof-shaped pieces, you're back to a cube again. And you can just keep doing that infinitely far in or infinitely far out. So I put that animation on the website because I was fascinated with this years ago. And turns out the inner cube, if you do that, make that model, is 3 times in each dimension, as, you know, 1/3 the dimension of the outer cube. So anyway, I think it's just kind of fascinating that these all relate. And if you look at crystallography and you think about, well, what makes up the minerals and the cells of our bodies, again, it's all geometry. These patterns show up again and again and again. These five basic shapes and permutations of them show up again and again and again in molecular and atomic geometry. So what's the most basic one that we rely on? Well, let's see. How about DNA?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, think about what the DNA geometry is. Well, you think of a helix. Well, a helix is basically the double helix is two strands spiraling around doing this sort of dance. Well, if you look down the barrel, if you will, down the end of the DNA molecule, what it turns out is you actually have those two strands are basically making pentagonal spirals. Looking down them. So you actually have a decagon or two pentagons, basically intermeshed with each other. So you have that golden ratio again. Then interestingly enough, the ratio of one complete turn of the DNA spiral to the diameter of that spiral, is 34 to 21 angstroms. Well, that just happens to be two of those Fibonacci numbers that are very close again to the golden ratio.
Mm-hmm.
And you have, I forget the names of the four compounds, it's C, A, G, and T, I believe are the letters, guanine, adenine, anyway, your listeners probably know the others, I think it's I'd have to look them up.
Well, but anyway, we can look them up.
You can look them up anyway. But one of those clusters of atoms, again, is another pentagonal chain. So there's just pentagons everywhere you look, and the basic building block of what we call life is just riddled with them. I mean, so no matter where you turn, if you see something biological going on, you're looking at sacred geometry. And then you look at the spiral galaxies, you know, moving outward. Again, the ratio of the each turn of the spiral converges on this golden ratio. When you look at what's called an equiangular spiral or spiral that's the same shape as the chambered nautilus shell or the fiddle fern or the cochlea of the inner ear or the shape of the fetus or just countless other examples in nature that spiral in or spiral out. So again, these Platonic solids are all interconnected because you can have the relationship between any two of them gives you this interconnectedness, and the golden ratio shows up over and over again, and even the cube, if you look at different orientations of it. So that's just one example of a whole class of objects that Plato and Pythagoras and Da Vinci thought were really cool. And if you look at their artwork, a lot of their sketches and their studies, you'll see that they were really into it. And folk, more contemporaries like M.C. Escher and the people, mm-hmm. who built the UN building, which is three golden rectangles stacked on top of each other. A golden rectangle is nothing more than a rectangle where one side of it is one relative to the golden ratio, which is about 1.618, is the other side, the longer side. And the Great Pyramid, which is again this one of the two books that got me into this whole thing, if you look at each of the four triangular faces that you see as you're walking around the Giza Plateau there in Egypt, you will see, if you look carefully, there's like a little crease in the middle of each of the faces that goes right up from the middle of the base, each of the base sides to the apex or the top of the pyramid, and that line is called an apothem. Well, it turns out that the ratio of the apothem to one of the half of the base sides is, again, that golden ratio to, you know, a couple decimal points. And then if you look at it from a bird's eye view, the ratio of the altitude or the height of the pyramid, which is about 480 feet, to the circumference is about 2 pi, which is kind of interesting because that means that the pyramid is a flat representation of a hemisphere. And it's so much interested a fellow named Mercator his graffiti was actually found in one of the rooms that's not open to the public above what's called the King's Chamber in the Great Pyramid. And his famous map projection that maybe some of your listeners remember from studying cartography or whatever in geography classes. Mercator's projection, basically, as far as we can tell, was inspired by studying the geometry of the Great Pyramid. So it just shows up in a lot of different disciplines and a lot of
different places. And they never told us that these kinds of things in algebra or geometry, did they?
Not too much, no.
Why didn't they tell us this? You know, it would have been so much more interesting.
Well, that's my thinking. That's my thinking, yeah.
Yeah, because for instance, I'm even thinking, I know a little bit, but not a lot, but I actually have studied a lot of feng shui. But the one thing that I found humorous is when I bought a house about 14 years ago, my sister helped me move in. But when she came into the kitchen and the family room, which were combined, she goes, oh my God, this is terrible. It's like a bowling alley. Now, the truth is, it's not like a bowling alley, but her point was she didn't feel comfortable because the golden mean was not there. The room was too long compared to its width. And it's so funny because I have worked actually forever to kind of divide that room and to do it in such a way that, you know, it meets that golden mean a little bit better. Now, I mean, I'm not doing it by measuring, but just, you know, I get what she's saying, that you walk into the room and you feel like it's not wide enough because it's so long.
Right.
And to me, that's a perfect example of a lot of us, we don't even know what it is that makes us feel uncomfortable when we go into a particular building or a particular house or something, but that's exactly what it is, because there are these sacred geometric angles or sacred geometry ratios that they're just embedded in our DNA. They're embedded in everything around us, and some people know them naturally, other people study them, but when they don't occur, then that's it. You walk in and you go, okay, this doesn't feel right. Or the ceiling feels way too high. Like, for instance, I've noticed that in homes where there will be beautiful, beautiful homes, but the ceiling is way too high. And I think there again, because the ratio isn't quite right. And so what I find when I'm in those homes, nobody ever goes into that room with a high ceiling. You know, and I just think it's interesting how to use it in our lives. And I guess that would be one of my next questions is, how do you use this in your life?
Well, I think
what do you do besides the mathematics and just really get off on it?
I have fun with the math and it actually kind of led me to, you know, a deeper inquiry into non-dual metaphysics, but I think that the geometry themselves are fascinating, and I think there is an aesthetic quality to them, and which you've touched on, and architecture is certainly one place that you can use them very, very skillfully. And there's been a number of studies done that suggest that things that have those proportions, whether it's a golden rectangle, a golden triangle, of which each of the arms of a five-pointed star is a golden triangle, if you can picture that shape. And there's a lot of different shapes like that that were used in Renaissance art, not just the architecture of buildings like the Great Pyramid and the Parthenon, which the face of which is a classic golden rectangle at the Acropolis. And lots of sculptures. If you analyze body proportions, the classic example of that is the navel to the ground compared to the navel to the top of the head. If you analyze hundreds of people, you'll find that that's, sure enough, the golden ratio.
Really?
There's actually dental reconstruction and I'm not sure what you call it, the profession. The surgeons that do dental reconstruction, they basically use a golden ratio template for the mouth to make sure that the teeth have that proportion as you're looking at them. And obviously they curve around inside your mouth, but the proportion as you look at them turns out to be the golden ratio as they progress. So, I mean, there's just countless places where it's used in architecture and art and so forth. I have fun with more of the, I guess you call them, the more primal shapes and just doing digital art and things like that with it. But there's people who've used it in music. A musician friend of mine basically divided an octave into 36 notes instead of 12, and he found that the 25th note above the fundamental was a golden ratio, and he made a song with these percussive pairs of chords of two notes, and it was just very amazing sounding.
Wow. So, I mean,
yeah, there's just all kinds of places that it shows up. The populations of, I think I touched briefly on the Fibonacci series. That's another place where, again, people everywhere from the stock market analysis to science that are looking at different things such as the buckyballs, fullerenes. There's places in organic and inorganic chemistry where these shapes are used to make new and interesting products. Everywhere you look, you'd be astonished if you just Google golden ratio. You'll find it all over the place in just so many different disciplines and fields of study and art and it's just all over the place. So there's certainly the practical applications of that in art, but I think the esoteric ones are the ones that have fascinated me just as much. And again, the principle of interconnectedness, I think, is something that really, really resonated with me. And about the same time I was getting into studying what's become known as sacred geometry, I also ran across a book called The Kybalion. And it talks about seven hermetic laws. Are you familiar with The Kybalion at all? Or?
A little bit, but I certainly couldn't talk about it. But yes, I heard about the hermetic laws.
Well, I think they actually fit very nicely with sacred geometry. In fact, I the second book that I put out called The Geometry Code actually has a geometric symbol paired to each of these seven laws, because I think that really fits nicely. So the first one is the law of mentalism, which states that everything is mental. And that is pretty esoteric right in and of itself. It basically suggests that we're living in a mental universe. And if you think about a symbol that would be a really good geometric symbol for that is a circle and a dot, because the dot really contains the seed, if you will, or the essence of everything that's around it and that everything that results from it. So the fruit from the tree then becomes, again, the circle with dots in it. So it goes on and on and on.
Which is also the symbol for the sun in astrology, by the way.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love it.
Primal cause, right? Exactly. Mm-hmm. So then you go to the second of the hermetic laws, which is the law of correspondence, which is that's probably the one that most people have heard of, the as above, so below, as below, so above. Mm-hmm. But it's also as within, so without. And if you take two circles and then overlap them such that the edge of one circle touches the center of another circle, which metaphorically, when we touch each other's hearts, if you will, then we have this shape that's sort of a crescent kind of a shape that's called the Vesica Pisces, which actually means fish bladder. but that's kind of the name is stuck. But what it really is this, it's also called an almond or mandorla. It goes by a bunch of different names. But that shape that's the intersection of two circles, again, was used a lot in Renaissance art. A lot of the classic masterpieces that were from, great art in museums, when they restore some of these masterpieces like Raphael and Da Vinci and so forth, if they need to do touch-up, what they do is they'll do an X-ray analysis, and what they discovered when they were starting to analyze some of these, and they looked at the lines that they drew on the canvas before they ever slathered a piece of, a bit of paint on the canvas, they were drawing things like golden rectangles and golden triangles and the Vesica Pisces, this shape of the intersection of the two circles. And they were using that particular shape, in fact, was used to depict the Christ in religious art many, many times. You'll find that if you look for Vesica Pisces in art, you'll find that all over the place in Renaissance and medieval art and that kind of thing.
So in other words, they didn't just get lucky.
No, it was very intentional. In fact, that actually kind of is – I'm glad you brought that up, because it basically is the left and right hemispheres of the brain, if you will, or the conscious and the intuitive combined that really make the genius, where you bring the two together rather than trying to keep them apart or separate. Mm-hmm. When you bring those two aspects together, it's that fusion or that integration or that reconnectedness, if you will, that brings about this genius, if
magic,
you will.
Magic, not magic, but the genius, the brilliance of it.
Yeah, because you're basically addressing the head and the heart. You're addressing every aspect of what we are as really as one being and one interconnected self. So that symbolism, I think, really works beautifully with the law of correspondence, the as above, so below. The eye, the shape of the eye is the vesica Pisces. And the stomata in plants, which is the little tiny orifice through which plants transpire oxygen and carbon dioxide back and forth, that is, again, this like the shape of the eye, this vesicle shape. So I think it's the eye being the mirror of the soul. I mean, that's a perfect example of this law of correspondence. And then the other laws are the law of vibration, which if you take a sine wave, it's a very beautiful geometric shape that relates to a rotating circle. Basically, now you're adding the element of time, rotation. The fourth law, the law of polarity, again, a line, and you can divide it however you want, but it's really one thing. So, and we can look at the law of polarity and this fourth hermetic law as being a representative of the idea that the inner and the outer are the same, but seen from different perspectives. And that the law of polarity suggests that things are identical in nature, but different in degree. So in other words, when you look at the form, you see diversity, but when you look at the content, you see that it's all the same.
Sounds like A Course in Miracles to me.
Yeah, it does. It really does. It really does. So I think you can use each of these hermetic laws as depending on the thought system you bring to it. You can see it as a way of integrating or bringing back to wholeness or as a way of moving farther apart. Take the spiral, for example, okay, which ties into the next hermetic law, which is the law of rhythm. I think the spiral makes a perfect example of the law of rhythm, where things spiral in or they spiral out. So you can either spiral back in toward integration or spiral out toward diversity. So our Big Bang suggests that, you know, if you look at galaxies and their spiral arms and so forth, that there's this incredible diversity and worlds and solar systems and all this stuff. And yet, if you think in terms of, okay, that it all came from this one idea, this one, you know, infinitesimal point that appeared to explode into this unimaginable diversity, you can either bring it back into unity or split it out into countless separate pieces. But the pattern through which that occurs is oftentimes a spiral one. Mm-hmm. So we can use the rhythms of our life by being more mindful, to tie into that first principle, the first hermetic law, to look at are we bringing things together? Are we harmonizing? Are we looking at where we're the same, or are we using it to in a less than kind way to emphasize the differences and the apartness? So, mm-hmm. And then the last two hermetic laws are the law of cause and effect, which is, I think, a fractal. If you look at a tree and its roots and its branches, and you think in terms of all the elements from the earth coming together, and the water and then the air, and from the branches, all bringing together what seem like countless individual separate causes, but when you blend them all together, it makes this one tree. But it's mirrored. You know, what we see is the effect of the branches and the fruit that might be bearing. But mirrored underneath the soil is this root structure, which is, I think, a beautiful metaphor for all the countless causes that come together that make up the one thing that is this moment. So countless choices that we've made have led us to this moment in our awareness, and we can use that awareness to go wherever we want to go with it. And the last one is the law of gender or generation of these seven hermetic laws, which I think that the yin-yang symbol, the classic Oriental shape of taking a circle and then dividing it in half and making two circles and then designing it in such a way that you have the outer is the inner of the other and vice versa, if you will. Mm-hmm. It basically is a reminder that whatever we see outside of ourselves is really a reflection of the inner, and the seeming other is doing the same thing with us. We're all projections of each other. And that we have this generative principle that we continue to generate along the lines of the nature of the thoughts that we have. So again, these seven hermetic laws really tie in beautifully, I think, to geometric symbols and to particularly the idea of being mindful of with which thought system we're using to apply them with.
Mm-hmm. Which is such a great concept. And of course, listening to all this too, I know we could have a whole other conversation. I'm thinking about how much astrology is based on, at least Western astrology, is based on the geometry of the angles between the planets.
Absolutely.
You know, like, and just like you're talking about, are we integrating, which is an opposition, mm-hmm. or are we merging, which is a conjunction? And right. all those different aspects, all those geometric angles between planets, each have a psychological feeling about them of right. how are you putting those two energies together?
Exactly.
So it would be, it makes me look at all the angles in astrology very differently.
Yeah, yeah. Because each one of those archetypes really around the 12 around the 1, which of course 12 and 1 is 13, which is a Fibonacci number and another mystical number that has roots in all kinds of cultural artifacts and so forth. Mm-hmm. But the archetypes then, if they're balanced and brought into a state of fusion, then the polarities disappear, which then ties into that fourth law of polarity. So,
wow.
For example, you take Aries and Libra, and you know, it's the matter antimatter annihilation of the differences that really is the result of bringing the two opposites together, bringing the darkness to the light on the altar of the mind, if you will, if you want a metaphysical metaphor.
Uh-huh. Well, you'll have to come back and we'll talk about all the sacred geometry with the astrology.
Sure, sure.
Because I know you know some astrology too, but we actually are 4 minutes till the end of the show. And so I want to make sure, I know it goes so fast, but I want to thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Because I hear about sacred geometry, but I really don't know very much about it. And now, at least I've got some of the language. I'm going to go back and listen to this show again and go to your website and check out. I want to see what you were describing as the the shapes all fitting within each other, because I didn't notice that when I went before. So tell our listeners where they can find your website.
Sure. It's just real simply geometrycode.com. And there's a whole bunch of stuff on there. If you click on introduction, there's a quick review of some of the ideas that I've covered. And if you search on just about any subject on there in the search bar, you can find articles and blog posts about a lot of these different ideas. And if you have a particular shape that you want to find, just plug it in there and you'll find all kinds of stuff. The Platonic solid recursion, the nested Platonic solid recursion, is in the middle of the homepage. There's the third video down. Just says nested Platonic recursion. That'll show you an animation that I did some years ago of how these five shapes that were attributed to Plato, that we now call Platonic solids, all fit into fit together.
Anyway, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
Okay, and any other announcement that you want to make before we go today?
Oh gosh. Well, just have fun, and I always appreciate feedback. And you mentioned that I think you said several books, but I've just written the two books on that are related to geometry, but they're on there as well. And I always, like I say, I always appreciate feedback. And if your listeners find things that are of interest in the topic of sacred geometry or just interconnectedness in general, I always appreciate hearing from people and love to share things on the Facebook page that I have devoted to that, as well as the Geometry Code website. So.
Okay, great. Well, Bruce, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you, CA. Really appreciate it.
And I want to thank all of our listeners and to everybody in the chat room. I know we didn't really look at your questions too much, but I was reading them, so thank you so much for that. And also thanks to our producer today, Christy Brower. And also I would encourage you to join me on Friday on 1-2 Radio at 8 in the morning, 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 Eastern, where we do talk about A Course in Miracles. And Bruce was on my show last week. You may want to go back into the archives and listen to that. And you are going to join me again for A Course in Miracles Goes to the Movies on the 12th of September, right?
Yes, that'll be fun.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun as we talk about all the symbolism in the movies for A Course in Miracles. So everybody, I hope you will put that on your calendar and like I said, go back and listen to the archives and you can hear what Bruce had to say about A Course in Miracles. So for today, though, stay tuned, because up next is Empowerment with Kelly Whetstone. here on Transformational Tuesdays. And as we close the show today, we will pay tribute to another Virgo birthday. This one is for actor Sean Connery, born on August 25th. And this man has made about 45 or maybe 50 movies, maybe more. But some of the ones that I like the best are those James Bond films. So we're going to play something from James Bond. This is CA signing out. You've been listening to Simple Tales, where astrology and spiritual alchemy rocks on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you listen to the world.